Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined on this beautiful Wednesday, minutes after Isaiah Patterson committed, by the great Brandon Huffman, who played a strong role in breaking that commitment news. Brandon, how do you instantaneously get quotes from a kid when he commits?
Oh, I just type really fast, Dave. You know, I just say, hey, give me those and let me type them really fast. If you haven't read the interview on Bro, which wouldn't be a surprise because we just literally posted it 5 minutes ago from when we were recording, go read it. You'll get some of the best quotes. Very detailed, very thorough thoughts from Isaiah Patterson on why he committed to UCLA. And I mean, one of the most well-spoken kids that I've talked to in a long time, just in terms of his introspectiveness. And I mean, I was able to get those quotes from him 30 seconds after committed and write the story in 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, just Brandon, you're just an incredible typist. But in seriousness, it's awesome that we have people like Brandon who, you know, the kids, their coaches, they trust that you're not going to let things slip and provide you stuff a little bit in advance, because that makes, you know, the breaking of a commitment story that much more exciting when everyone can read the quotes immediately. A service it's really kind of exclusive to 24/7 Sports. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Market owned.
So this is a big commitment. It's one of the two Yelm linebackers that UCLA had on official visits about 3 weeks ago. Isaiah Patterson was the one who came away from that visit. I mean, his quotes after the official visit were also of the, wow, that's, you don't often read a guy that excited. So I don't think it's a big surprise that he committed or that he's been committed for about a week already. But what's your take on this commitment, and what kind of expectations should fans have for Patterson?
Okay, I'm gonna first temper by saying if people are expecting him to be Miles Jack, he's not. You know, the last great player that UCLA got from the state of Washington was Miles Jack. Very different type of players. Isaiah Patterson's not going to play running back. Now, Braden Platt, his teammate, might be closer to Miles Jack, but from an Isaiah Patterson viewpoint, what he's going to bring is he's going to bring some positional versatility. This is a guy who played defensive line early in his career when he was in Vancouver, made the move to Yelm, played more of a stand-up edge role, but he could play inside linebacker. He's going to have options to play, you know, a couple different spots. He's already got size. This isn't a guy you're going to need to get bigger, or, you know, he might need to get stronger, but he's already almost getting to near, you know, 55 feet in the shot put. So he's got strength. He's going to enroll early. It's just more a matter of him continuing to develop as a player and making that transition fully from being a defensive lineman to playing linebacker. I think he's a, you know, high ceiling type of guy for UCLA. I know there was one guy on the board who said he had no other Power Five offers, which he did. He had Oregon and Washington State. And then even though this same poster kept posting, well, he's top 800, then asked, is he top 300? The friggin' website answered that question for you there, fella. But is he, you know, an elite player? Probably not. But if you look at, or in terms of an elite recruit, but if you look at the three schools that were the most active for him, they're all very defensive-centric head coaches. Dan Lanning at Oregon, Andy Avalos at Boise State, and Jake Dickert at Washington State. So I think that kind of, you know, speaks to it too. When he's overshadowed by a teammate, when he's playing only half a game as a junior because they were blowing everybody out, I think this kid is a very high ceiling player and is going to be really good in college, and you know, is the kind of guy you add to a UCLA program where they've been kind of portal heavy. He may need a year of development just because he spent more time on the defensive line early on his career, but this is the kind of player, caliber of player you want, and he's the kind of players that a lot of good programs are built on.
Yeah. I mean, we've been kind of banging the drum for a while, but continuing to add developmental pieces, especially on defense, where you don't have to reload with starters every single year because some guy has developed, you know, over multiple seasons to be a starter level guy. That's what you need, I think, to be a sustainable program. Obviously, the model is consistently changing because the transfer portal is still so new, but that just feels true. It has the feel of truth that you're going to need to develop within your program with some frequency because, I mean, just look at this past cycle was, I would say, harder than the previous cycle to get starter level guys. I think one that they absolutely nailed and was awesome they could get was J. Michael Sturdivant. But the days of like kind of easily landing a Zach Charbonnet in the transfer portal are probably behind UCLA. And so it becomes more of a war of NIL, more of a war of all that kind of stuff. So landing developmental guys who, you know, I could be speaking out of turn. I don't think Isaiah Patterson is an NIL deal. I think it has much more to do with, oh, I can fit into that program and develop. And eventually, you know, I like Ken Norton Jr. and eventually develop into a starter level player. And that's still going to be the lifeblood of a program like UCLA, where NIL is not going to be, you know, UCLA is not going to be a top five NIL program.
No.
So landing those types of guys and turning them into players over a period of time is probably still the ideal way to go in large part for recruiting classes.
I think the other thing too is, like, again, you know, when you can get a player who is willing to come in and be developed, yeah, he's enrolling early because he wants to play early, but he's also not a guy that's coming in expecting to play right away. Those are the guys that usually stay the course a little longer. They're the guys that you're not having to re-recruit at the end of December or at the end of November when the season's over, trying to keep them from going into the portal. This is a guy, we granted it's an apples and oranges comparison, especially with him missing all the spring, but like a Luke Duncan, you know, he's not going to scare off Dante Moore, but also Luke Duncan understands he's probably going to need a couple years. When you get an Isaiah Patterson, he's not going to come in with the expectation he's starting day one.
Right.
He's coming in with the understanding I might need a year or two before I'm really fully playing at the level and the amount I want to play. But you're also not having to spend the entire offseason trying to keep him from leaving.
Right, exactly. So this is the latest commitment for UCLA. They've had, I would say, a pretty good May, a little bit of end of April too. They've gotten commitments in the last, it's about a month now, from Mark Schroller, the offensive tackle from Mission Viejo, and then Marquise Thorpe Taylor was just a few days ago, the offensive tackle also from the state of Washington. Can you say pipeline, baby? And now Patterson. So I don't know what's, because I'm remembering last year when it suddenly looked like UCLA was recruiting a lot better in the high school ranks for like, it seemed like 3 weeks in May and maybe the beginning of June. And then it more or less dropped off a cliff until basically the end of the high school season. Is this more the same, or are you noticing, I mean, there've been a ton of official visits that we've been reporting on throughout all of May. There'll be another big weekend coming up this weekend. Do you think there's a shift a little bit with some of the new assistants in place that they're, I don't know, approaching high school recruiting a little bit more aggressively, or is this sort of the same situation as last year where they're trying to get some commitments done before the summer and then it's going to be this big lull period?
Well, I know we're going to make a move from talking a linebacker to the offensive line, but I think, you know, you just look at the offensive line recruiting and what a stark contrast to a year ago when I think they brought in 7 offensive linemen to visit in the month of May and didn't land any of them. And the only offensive lineman they ended up getting a commitment from and then signing was Tabaki Tuiakovilatu, out of Fontana.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Hey, I'm on the
podium. Can we all just take a second and marvel at that pronunciation right there?
I'm on the Polynesian Bowl selection committee for a reason, Dave, and it's because of my enunciation abilities mostly, but also because I'm really good at practicing names when I'm talking about them. In the case of Tuvaki, Or Tabaki. Yeah, I just butchered it. Of course I did. I get a little excited and think I'm that, and then I get humbled. But if you look at their offensive line recruiting a year ago, you know, they got one commitment late, and it wasn't until a late offer. But they were trying. They just weren't closing. Somebody asked a question on the board the other day, is there a difference in strategy compared to a year ago? I don't know that there's a difference in strategy, but remember, last year you were undergoing the transition from Drevno being an analyst in that fall to Justin Fry leaving, what, in January after the bowl game, or after the bowl game, they didn't play, but he left in January. And with recruiting calendars shifting earlier and earlier, by the time Drevno was making these offers, yeah, he got these guys to visit, but other schools kind of had relationships built. Well, now he's able to offer a Joshua Glanz last summer, and then they get the commitment from him in January. Yeah, the Schroeder commitment, you know, came pretty quickly. The recruitment maybe took a little longer than people on Bro were hoping it would be, but they ultimately got him. But then the Marquise Thorpe-Taylor one, that was a late offer, kind of like Schroeder, but the impact of him being able to go by that school in January and to go see Marquise Thorpe-Taylor back in January and to start building that relationship, but then make the offer, be worthwhile and be a little something and then get him in the visit. I think the difference in strategy is now they're closing on those guys. And when you're five commitments, three of those are offensive linemen. You're the five visitors or the five commitments, you know, three have taken an official visit and then committed shortly after, although maybe Schroeder visited after he committed. But, you know, in the case of Thorpe-Taylor and Patterson, you got guys to commit within weeks of their visits. Last year when they did the May visits, a lot of these guys had June visits scheduled, and then they still took the June visits. In the case of Marquise Thorpe-Taylor, he was still planning to take visits. Patterson was planning to take visits. They canceled them. So they've done a better job of sealing the deal on the visits and not letting those guys take those ensuing visits that may cause some, you know, confusion and disinterest or misinformation from the schools that they visit. So I think there's just a better close rate now happening rather than, hey, come visit us, go take your other visits, then decide. It's, hey, come take your visit. We're going to sell you on this place, so you're not going to want to come anywhere else and visit anywhere else.
Yeah, well, whatever it is, it's definitely an improvement, significantly so. And, you know, I mean, you touched on it right now, but landing three guys who are currently ranked as offensive tackles, from a depth perspective, as Brandon shakes himself a martini, from a depth perspective.
It's a Pedialyte, but I'm going to pretend it's a martini.
It sounded like ice in like a drink shaker. But, from a depth perspective, obviously we've been hammering it all spring. UCLA needs prep offensive linemen that they can develop into players because, frankly, a lot of the guys in the program right now are not necessarily developing the best. So you gotta improve your numbers so your hit rate can start to apply. Adding three guys with tackle potential, even if they are not necessarily going to play that in college, you know, Thorpe-Taylor might end up at guard, be a pretty athletic guard. But adding three guys with that kind of versatility is huge for the future of the program to kind of keep those pipelines flowing. And it's what we just talked about with linebacker, with Isaiah Patterson. But landing guys you can develop, especially on the offensive line, where we've all seen how difficult it is to land, you know, starter level guys, that they tend to be highly recruited. They tend to be, you know, tends to be a pretty picked over position group. You got to develop from within. At least probably half your starters, you know, two or three of your starters every year have to be developed from within.
Well, what's crazy is that they may not be done with offensive linemen either. They're doing really well with Nathan Roy, who obviously his brother Benjamin's on the team right now, had himself a good spring, could potentially be, you know, in the rotation this year. Obviously, you got a Duke Clements who's there for, I think Duke Clements came in the same class as Jonathan Ogden and Mike Flanagan. No, we all love you, Duke. But you know, he's just biding his time, but you've got an opportunity at Nathan Roy. You've got a really good opportunity at Justin Talanu'u, you know, probably I would say at worst top two for both of those guys. Justin's a tackle. Nathan Roy probably it plays tackle, but moves inside with Thorpe-Taylor. You know, he is a tackle, but obviously he understands that he may slide inside to play guard. You've got Schroeder and Glanz who have tackle length, but you know, what a stark contrast. With the exception of the 2020 class, and I'm sorry, the 2021 class, Thomas Cole, Garrett DiGiorgio. I think that was the Benjamin Roy class. You know, UCLA hasn't had really good offensive line classes in the last 5 years. They've had small offensive line classes. They haven't had, yeah, there was the year they got Sean Ryan, which was obviously big. There was the year they got Alec Anderson late, which was big. But they haven't had good size classes, really, if you want to get down to it, since Adrian Clem was the offensive line coach. And now they potentially could land five key targets out of 9 or 10. Okay, remember what I said earlier? I misstated the name of a commitment. My son just pointed out to me that I spelled it wrong on Instagram. I'm glad that I have my son.
It's children are humbling. They provide humbling moments.
I can do it. I can fix it on Instagram where, you know, I don't have to pay for a blue check mark to do so. Okay, we're good. Thanks, Kate. Appreciate that. But you look at this offensive line class and know that, you know, it still might not be done, and they could end up with five offensive linemen. And you're not forced to go rely on a Raekwon O'Neal or a Spencer Holstein or what's our brother in Christ coming in from whatever school. Yeah, there you go. He's coming from the Fighting Brian Jones, correct?
And Jake Wiley from Colorado.
You're not having to always rely on the portal. You know, if you look at the two of the better offensive lines in the Pac-12 last year, they were Oregon and Washington. And both of those schools, you know, the majority of their offensive linemen were players that developed in that program. And granted, a lot of those guys had 6 years, you know, in the case of Henry Bainivalu and Jackson Kirkland. But there is still tremendous value in developing your own offensive lineman rather than going into the portal. Oregon State probably has the best offensive line in the Pac-12, and it's heavy involved with high school recruiting and then developing them. You know, speaking of Marquise Thor-Taylor, Talies Fuongo is one of the best offensive linemen in the Pac-12 from Oregon State out of Mount Tahoma High School. And that was a guy that when Jim Mihalchik brought him in, it was with the understanding that, like, hey, we want you to play early, but we don't need you to play early. So get yourself ready. And now UCLA can bring these guys in with some more experienced guys ahead of them, but get those guys into the weight program, get them developed so that in 2025, 2026, they can play and you're not having to go portal diving.
Yeah, no, and I love to call it portal diving. That's it's a really nice visual because it's a, you know, it's a play on dumpster diving, which I love. How this is just kind of a curiosity. How much more difficult does your job get with schools prioritizing the transfer portal so much? Like, because your bread and butter is high school recruiting, right?
Yes. It's not so much the schools, it's just the website, the team sites that are, you know, kind of like, hey, do you have any contact information for this guy that you covered 3 years ago? And, you know, can you get in touch with him because, you know, he's going to probably transfer. So it's like, the old days, we used to celebrate the day after signing day as National Unfollow on Twitter Day. You could unfollow those guys. You washed your hands clean of them. You never had to worry about them again. Now you're like, I'm going to keep this guy followed for a couple of years because he might go into the portal. And you're now finding that you have to maintain those communication lines with the kid because you might end up having to cover his second recruitment or in the case of JT Daniels, his fourth recruitment. So it does get difficult because, you have the relationship with these kids and you want to, you know, write about them. A lot of them will reach out to you. Hey, I'm in the portal. You know, can you write a story or can you help me get found? And it's like, bro, you couldn't play on an 0-12 team for the last 4 years. I'm sure that, you know, Kirby Smart's sitting there by the phone waiting for you to call him. So it's definitely added another layer, another dimension to it. But it also, you get to a point where there's some schools such as UCLA where they're so heavy portal recruiting heavy that at times they're kind of like, all right, there's not a lot of high school recruiting action coming, but come November and December, you guys are going to make me busy.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You know, you do have probably a little bit more cyclical with certain schools where it's like, okay, I can, you know, dial it back here and pay attention a little bit more over here for now. I was curious about a couple guys. I mean, obviously UCLA has got a few new coaches, or a couple new coaches, but Cody Whitfield has already, you know, his name's popping up in a lot of recruiting stories. You know, he offered the JC DB, and I'm just wondering, what's your sense of him so far as a recruiter? How familiar were you with him when he was at, what was it, Sac State? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what kind of potential do you think he has as a recruiter? Because watching him talk, like just watching him do like one of the interviews, I'm like, that guy's got personality out the wazoo. But I'm just kind of wondering how that plays on the trail.
Yeah, this is one of the fun parts of the job. You know, Greg Biggins and I have had this conversation numerous times where one of the unique things about being in this industry as long as he and I have, you know, Greg's been doing it for 100 years. I think he actually covered Jonathan Ogden's recruitment. I'm just kidding, Greg. But like, he's now covering second generation recruits. But we both have been doing this 20 plus years where we're now covering a lot of guys, or a lot of these guys that are in coaching are guys that we covered in this job. So I remember talking to Cody when he was in high school, and you know, he was a commitment to Stanford. UCLA had offered him, you know, at the time when he was at Loyola High School. You know, his teammate at Loyola was a young man named Jerry Neuheisel, who was a quarterback, and you know, he was two classes behind Anthony Barr. And if you remember John Young, the tight end from Loyola, there was a time where, you know, UCLA was really kind of getting whoever they wanted at Loyola High School, and Cody got away from Rick Neuheisel. He committed to Stanford, and at that point, David Shaw had just taken over for Jim Harbaugh. But the ace in the hole that Stanford always had was that his dad, Bob, was a Stanford alum, was an All-American, a first-round draft pick. So, you know, Cody Winfield almost ended up being a Bruin in high school. Instead, he ends up being one – I'm sorry, ended up being a Bruin in college. He ends up being one postgraduate. He's a Los Angeles guy. He's a Southern California native. His dad played in Southern California. He played in Southern California. So he's got, you know, an affinity for UCLA, even if he kept ending up on SportsCenter just embarrassing some former – I'm sorry, too soon?
Oh, man. That was brutal.
I hate to go the Chris Tucker route and bring it up old ish, but you know, I had to. So now, you know, it's like Ken Norton, for all the years he deemed his alma mater recruiting against him, now for all the times that Cody Whitfield put UCLA on SportsCenter, he's now putting UCLA on the lexicon of a lot of these recruits. And again, this is a guy that you may not necessarily see the fruits of his labor come to fruition in the initial 2024 class because of when he was hired. And again, like I said earlier, the recruiting calendar expediting, but it's been fascinating talking with some of the DBs who have been offered by him. It's like, yeah, you know, we really like UCLA, and a big reason for that is Cody Whitfield, but these other coaches have been recruiting me for 2 years. So, you know, they've got a little bit of an advantage, but he's closing the gap. And I think you'll see the fruits of it. Maybe it happened in 23, but or in the 24 class, but I think you'll really start to see it in the future. And when he was at Sac State, I remember talking to him 2 summers ago up at Sac State camp. And at that time, he was just, I don't even know if he was a GA at UCLA or if he was just doing like a QC role, but he was up there with the Darius Pickett. And, you know, the next year he's at the Sac State camp as a Sac State coach. So, you know, he didn't have to do the model of going to a D3 school or a D2 school. He went to one of the best FCS programs in the country and recruited. And then after a year there, gets hired at a Power 5 school. So I think that kind of shows the arc that he's on as a coach. And, you know, now that he's in Los Angeles, and I don't think Stanford's going to be a threat to hire him back because they just hired a brand new staff there. And I think with, you know, the certainty with UCLA in the Big Ten, rather the uncertainty with Stanford in the Pac-12, you know, certainly gives him reason to stay. And I think UCLA is going to benefit from him in the long run.
You know what the funniest thing is, Brandon? You're such a clever guy. Because I just spent so long looking up who was the DB. Because I remember Francis Owusu caught the ball in Jaleel Wood, dude, right? But I was like, who was the DB that Cody Whitfield caught the ball on? And you had said already, and I finally put it together when I watched him do it while you were talking, that you said, I don't want to bring up old Ish. And it was on Ish Adams. And it's just full circle, buddy. You've got just the brain. You've got a marvelous brain.
Thank you. I was also trying to be, what's the word? Censoring myself, because I don't know if the FTC is going to hurt me for FTC. What's the organization that would monitor you?
FCC.
FCC. I didn't want to go like full Barstool and start using expletives, but I also knew I could have a little play on words.
Yeah, no, that was great. Your brain moves at a speed that other people can only gawk at.
That was the Thursday night game where I think Christian McCaffrey had like 7,000 yards against UCLA, right?
Yeah, I think it was. And then I guess the other one to really kind of wonder about is Danton Lynn. If you've heard anything really at this point, because let's say this about Danton Lynn. He came in at the end of February. Probably had to get more or less immediately into evaluating the team and getting practice prep going and then doing spring ball. But have you heard about him at all on the trail at this point? Because he's coming over from the NFL where he was for, I don't know, the better part of 8-9 years. So he's never really had to do this before. Are you hearing anything about his acumen as a recruiter?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, talking to a couple of the visitors that have gone to UCLA in the last couple of weeks, you know, especially with Isaiah Patterson, Braden Platt, you know, they're linebackers. So, of course, they're, you know, they're talking about how Ken Norton Jr. has come to their school a couple of times, how he's been the one recruiting. But then both kind of cited just getting to sit down and talk with Denton Lynn and getting to, you know, spend some time with him. And I think when you've got a defensive coordinator, you don't necessarily, and I've long felt this theory, or not a theory, this philosophy, and I think it's why you're seeing a bigger push by college coaches to let recruiting staffers go on the road and keep some of their position coaches or coordinators from having to recruit. You really want your coordinators to be, if they're true coordinators, and especially in a system at UCLA where it's an offensive head coach and he's calling the plays, you kind of want your defense coordinator to just be worried about the X's and O's. And yeah, if he's a good recruiter, great, but his value is certainly going to be on Saturdays in the fall. So you want him to be able to really manage and game plan and, you know, be using the spring to implement his defense. You use a Ken Norton Jr. to be the position coach and to be the recruiter, but then you're still using your coordinator on those visits to do the sit downs and the chalk talk. And like, this is what we're going to run. This is what our scheme is. This is how we envision you doing it. And both Patterson and Platt cited just the conversations with Dan Lane, just how sharp he is and how smart he is and how they really liked him. And I think the fact that he's a younger guy certainly makes him a little more relatable too. So you kind of got a nice mixture with the position coaches and a Brian Norwood being an older guy, Ken Norton, who's had the career as a coach and as a player, that he's a more seasoned guy. And, you know, even on the defensive line, you've got a little bit more seasoning with Nakaka Malloy, who's been a co-DC, guys that have been around the game. But then Lynn can kind of be like, hey, I'm the head MF-er in charge of this defense. He's not going to, you know, kind of walk around like that. But he's the guy that's breaking down what they're going to do defensively for these guys, but yet he's kind of young and these guys can kind of relate. So they get the combination of the two, and there's been some good feedback. And, you know, talking to some of the high school coaches, I was on the road all last week, and, you know, talking to some of the high school coaches just that went down to UCLA spring practice, they noticed, you know, just how keen he is and how smart he is and very relatable. So I think once he really gets turned loose come this fall and maybe in November, December, January, you're really going to see what he can bring to the table. Because like you mentioned, he's never recruited before. He's been a NFL coach, but the fact that he's smart, that he's running this defense at the young age, he's come from the NFL and an NFL team that's had great success defensively. He's kind of that cool closer that a lot of these kids are really digging.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey. Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
It's so funny that you're talking about this guy and you're like, yeah, you know, he's not too old. You know, he can relate to these guys. And I'm like, this dude started college after I graduated. Like, he started college like about 2 weeks after I graduated.
I mean,
what are we doing? Like, what are we doing that we're not making like $1.5 million? I don't know what he's making. $1 million. I don't know. I haven't looked at his salary stuff. But he's what are we doing that we're not making that coaching defense at the college level?
I've been telling my son, who's a junior in high school, like, you know what? He wants to pursue a career in player personnel. I'm like, dude, you need to pursue a career in coaching, because if you get fired, you get more financial security for life. I want to raise my son to be a fired college head football coach.
Yeah.
Because imagine you
it's the dream.
Do your job, but now you're going to get paid $10 million to stop doing your job.
I would like to, in the future, be a terrible Power 5 head coach.
Yes. I mean, you could tell me all the things that you can message board geniuses. You could target me all you want. You could say all those negative things about me for $10 million. I'll take the strap.
Yeah, no.
Weiss paid millions of dollars for people to still call him an idiot. But you know what he's calling himself at the end of the day? You can call him an idiot. He calls himself a millionaire.
Well, like, that's the thing. It's like, look, being a CEO of a major Fortune 500 company, you do get the same kind of, you know, umbrella when you get fired, but at the expense of more than likely selling your soul away. Mm-hmm. College coaches don't have to do that. You basically are a gym teacher, and you might have to yell at kids some of the time, but otherwise, just be bad at your job. You're fine.
Yep.
And you're going to make, you know, when you get fired after 3 years, you're going to make an additional, like, $8 to $10 million. It's great. It's a great gig.
That is the dream. If you can do it, what they say, what's the phrase? It's nice work if you can get it. It's even better if it's nice work if you stop having to get it.
Yeah, no, it's nice work if you never have to do it again. Yeah,
that's the goal.
We've got the dream lined up. Let's just go back in time really quick and, you know, develop some actual football acumen. Okay, but you don't have to need it. We've seen some of these clowns code.
Also, not a requirement anymore. I mean, and that's one of the fascinating things about covering recruiting is there's a lot of coaches that I know that get hired strictly for the Jimmys and Joes and certainly as hell not for the X's and O's. And then they just hang around long enough and they get promoted to a coordinator role. And then they're demoted from the coordinator role pretty quickly afterwards. It's like, look, my brother, look, my sister, look, my cousin, my nephew, just go get us guys. Let somebody else coach those guys. We're not going to have you coach those guys anymore. Okay?
It's so beautiful. All right. Is there anything else with football recruiting you want to talk, Sean? I want to move over to basketball recruiting for a bit.
I mean, the only other thing is, if you really want to, we could just touch on UCLA's big Beehive State weekend. And
yeah, let's touch on the official visitors. Let's talk about it.
So they are bringing in some elite talent this weekend. They have a top 10 player in the country coming that they aren't going to get probably in Elijah Rushing. But when was the last time, with the exception of Dante Moore, that UCLA had a top 10 player come visit in the spring and, you know, use one of his precious official visits on? Well, this weekend, Elijah Rushing's in, a defensive lineman from Arizona. They probably have a much more realistic chance in Keona Wilhite. He'll be in for a visit. You've got St. John Bosco running back Cameron Jones coming in, who I felt like UCLA has been the leader for quite some time. At this point, it's the only official visit he's got scheduled. Certainly, UCLA's had success at Bosco in previous classes. Kwazi Gilmer, a player that I'm a big fan of out of Sierra Canyon High School, formerly at Chaminade, a receiver, four-star receiver. He'll be visiting. And then they've got three guys from the state of Utah. Blake Tabarachi, whose brother is at USC. They got Davis Andrews, a top five safety from the state, or top five player who plays safety from Utah. And then Falatau Satoala will be in town. Blair Angulo is going to be all over those. Nobody covers the state of Utah like Blair. And then another local kid, and Peyton Waters, who was one of the more recent offerees from UCLA, plays at Birmingham High School, same high school that produced Dennis Keyes, who's now coaching at Campbell Hall. Peyton Waters has five official visits. This will be official visit number two. So they're getting a nice mixture where they're getting a lot of defensive guys that are coming in with Rushing and Davis, with Tabarachi and Andrews and Sotalu. But then you've got a key running back target in Cameron Jones, a receiver target in Kwazi Gilmer, and then Waters, who's being recruited as an athlete, could play on either side of the ball. You know, May has been a good month for UCLA hosting visits, and they're hoping that this last weekend will be one of their best ones yet because a lot of key targets coming in.
All right, give me this, Brandon. Who among these, and it doesn't mean that one is certain to, but who among these guys coming in this weekend would be most likely to pop next week after their visit?
Cameron Jones. I would say, you know, unless Colorado can get a visit scheduled with him, he took an unofficial in April, he wants to take an official, but unless Colorado sets that official visit, I would anticipate that Cameron Jones is the most likely of this group to commit.
All right, so Elijah Rushing, that situation is interesting because Blair posted on the board something to the effect of, you know, UCLA was very much on the outside looking in here, wasn't, like, you know, barely making the cut, and now they're getting the first official visit. What's your sense of what the deal is here? Like, do they have a real chance? Was this some last minute, you know, effort from Malloy? What was it?
Yeah, I think it's a lot, you know, of Akaika Malloy really having. Here's one thing that people need to understand when guys are coming from other programs. The players that you got to that previous program, they speak highly of you. So while Akaika Malloy might no longer be at Washington, Zion Tipitola-Fatui, Braylon Trice, you know, obviously Latu Latu, who he recruited to Washington and then to UCLA, and you look at some of the pass rushers that he's had at Washington and now at UCLA that he recruited, there's been a correlation with their success and having played under Akaika. So if you're a guy like Elijah Rushen, why wouldn't you, you know, go take a visit for a guy who's developing, a player from the state of Arizona, and Braylon Trice, who's showing up in a number of mock drafts as a top 15 pick out of Arizona, who's now flourishing at Washington, and Akaika laid the groundwork for, you know, with Keona Wilhite, who I think UCLA has a really good chance at, a far better chance at Keona Wilhite than they do probably Elijah Rushen, but it's his teammate at South Point Catholic. So that certainly doesn't hurt either, where, you know, hey, my guy's going to go take a visit. I'll go take a visit with him. We're teammates. Maybe we're not going to be teammates in college, but let's get a visit in together at a school that we're both being recruited by, and let that be with a coach who's done a really good job of developing some of these guys. So I think it's a little bit of a tip of the cap to, you know, his teammate, and a tip of the cap to Akaika Malloy. And who knows, maybe UCLA can pull a rabbit out of their hat and get him. But I think just getting the visit, considering where UCLA was at a number of years ago and they couldn't even get top end guys to take a visit, this certainly is a nice change.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on now to basketball. So UCLA continues to hit the international waters. For not waters, they're not in the water. Slovenia's they're not quite landlocked, but you know, Northern Balkans, I guess you'd call it. Jan Vide, Slovenian guard that plays for the Real Madrid, I think U20, U18 team, whatever, doesn't matter. He committed to UCLA this week. This is the second public commitment of the international quartet. The first was Elon Fabloy from France, is a little bit more of a wing. Vide is a little bit more of a guard. And then the expectation is that Adai Mara at some point here, relatively soon, will be publicly committing to UCLA. And then there is still a fourth, an unnamed fourth, which is potentially over the next month or so. So Vide committed publicly. He's a 6'5", 6'6"-ish guard. If you've watched any of his video, the number one thing that jumped out to me, and I'd love to hear what jumped out to you if you watched any of his stuff, Brandon, is he just drives relentlessly, shoots a ton of floaters, makes a shocking amount of them, seems to have a whole big bag of tricks off the bounce. And then from what I saw, really needs to work on his outside shot, and that's probably going to be his big limiting factor early on in his basketball career. But there's a lot of upside with him just because he is really aggressive and really has just kind of natural scoring ability with a ton of different moves and array of different ways of putting the ball in the basket. I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think there's some like wow factor to his game where he can jump, or he can slash, he can shoot, those floaters. He's got the ability to, you know, he's a good passer. I think it's going to be really fun to watch. I mean, he's kind of got a little ish again. I'm using that phrase a lot. He's got a little ish to him too, like a little swag.
Yep.
I've heard people say that he's the best player to come from Slovenia since Luka Doncic. Okay, maybe that person was Greg Biggins, but I've heard people say it. It doesn't matter who said it. It's just that some people said it. And I've heard that there's other people that said Vide is better than Victor. Okay, that might have been Greg Biggins also. But the point being that, like, you know, watching his film, this isn't a guy that you're kind of scratching your head like, who is this guy? Why did they just basically get, you know, the college version of Slobodan Vidinko for you early 2000s Laker fans? This is the guy that I think is going to be pretty fun to watch. And, you know, it's it's nice to see that UCLA isn't just losing everybody. They're actually getting some players to come in to play basketball for them next year.
Yeah, isn't that great? And if everyone doesn't know, Greg Biggins is the biggest UCLA hoops recruiting aficionado in maybe the century. Just locked in 100% of the time. Jan Vide, he's going to be fun. I would expect him to probably play some backup point guard in his first year. He's not a traditional point guard, not at this stage, maybe not ever. He's going to be like kind of a lead guard, you know, kind of your lead scoring guard, which is, you know, pretty common now at the NBA level. But I think that's more or less what he is. And so if he comes in and is backing up Dylan Andrews, when he's in, you can expect him to be, you know, calling his own number a fair amount. And that's, if you've watched enough of his games, it's improving. Shot selection was an issue early on in his career, because when you can score like that, it's hard to facilitate as easily and as well. But if there's one thing that you can be supremely confident that Mick Cronin will iron out in a player, it's the idea of good shot, bad shot. And I would expect whatever remains of, you know, I gotta throw the world on my shoulders will be ironed out of V-Day pretty quickly at UCLA. But I mean, overall, really nice get. I think you can expect him to compete to start. I don't know if he will start from the jump. It kind of depends on the form of the rest of the roster. If they get a starting quality big wing, then it's going to be harder and harder to play Mara and Bona together. And it might be harder to do that no matter what. You know, playing two bigs is always something you should be a little bit skeptical of in the college level these days. But if that ends up happening, you've got one big at the five, and then you've got some sort of starting quality 3-4, and then Fabloy, V-Day, Stefanovic, all those guys could factor into the wing spots, the off-guard spot. And so it'll be interesting. I do expect him to play considerably in year one. I think his scoring potential is going to be really enticing for the coaching staff. And then the question is, as it is with all these international guys, is he going to be good enough from the jump to go pro after a year? Because you sort of know, but you don't really know, because international competition can be hit and miss sometimes, and evaluating how they translate to the American game from, you know, FIBA stuff can be it can be an adjustment period. So. And Vide has some obvious holes in his game that still need to be worked out. You know, he's not a great three-point shooter. He probably still needs to develop if he's going to be a true lead guard at the pro level, from a distribution standpoint, from a playmaking standpoint. So I think there's reason enough to think that he's probably sticking around for more than a year or two, especially considering he may not even start this year.
And I think that's, you know, nice, because when UCLA keeps losing as many people as they do from this roster, you kind of want a little bit of continuity and consistency. Maybe yeah. Mick doesn't. Maybe he's a big fan of the one and done. But I would think that he would like to, you know, obviously we know football and basketball recruiting are so different, because, you know, you do have the portal in football and guys get frustrated and leave. But the NBA, that's always something that's very real for some of these guys. So if you can get a guy to stick around for a couple of years, you will absolutely take him.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're looking at the roster for next year, so right now, Sebastian Mack, Devin Williams, Brandon Williams, Alon Fabloy, Jan Vide, and then Lazar Stefanovic are the known quantities. We're anticipating a Daimara, so that's seven newcomers. And then if the fourth international pops, then that's eight new coming players into a roster that already was losing a ton of starters. So the continuity is going to be completely thrown out the window for next year. Like, there's going to be, you know, Dylan Andrews, who played a role this year, but not a huge one, is going to be one of the main returners. Kenny Nuba, who was, you know, backup center. Will McClendon. And then potentially, obviously, a Dembona, Jalen Clark. It's so much is going to depend on how these guys gel together, because, like you said, they've lost a ton of the roster. And it's going to be interesting to see how it all comes together and how quickly, you know, because I think if you look at what they're bringing in and all this kind of stuff, this should be a very talented roster. It's just going to be very young, and they're going to have to go through a big, big, steep learning curve. It could look not very good in November. And then the question is, by end of February, early March, how's it looking? And Mick Cronin's track record at this point is it'll probably look pretty good. But
yeah, I mean, it could be a lot like year one, where, you know, there weren't the expectations in year one because there was some youth. There was some, you know, is Tiger Campbell going to be the player they hoped he would coming off an injury? Is Jaime Jaquez going to be able to play at this level? And there was, you know, there was some youth. Yeah, you had Chris Smith back and you had some of the other guys, but the expectations were low. And then when they surged past it, unfortunately, COVID knocked it out. But then the next year, it was like they crumbled under some of the expectations early on before rallying and making it to the Final Four. But it's almost like when there's kind of a Utah football feel to Mick Cronin's program, where like when they're least expected to do something, that's when they're the most dangerous.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I think that that level of consistency is what you want to see. And this year is going to be that one big test. If he can produce a program, produce a team this year that is, you know, competing really, really well in the Pac-12, especially by January, February, March, and is, you know, in contention for a decent enough seed in the NCAA tournament. I don't know if it's going to be top four this year, but decent enough. Then I think you can say, okay, he's got the program more or less exactly how he wants it, where he can bring in eight new guys and not really miss too much of a beat. So we'll see, but it's a pretty good situation with the way high school recruiting has gone this cycle, with some of their bigger targets, to have a fallback plan that includes getting, you know, already more or less known three of the top international guys on the market is, that's a pretty good backup plan. So, all right, well, that's about it for me. You got anything else, Brandon?
I do not have anything else, Dave, other than it's so great to hear your voice. And if anybody was listening, this episode was not brought to you by Under Armour because there was no click-clacking going on in the background. Kind of a staple of Brandon Huffman being on any broadcast.
We'll see. Maybe I can work some in there in the edit. All right. Well, for Brandon Huffman, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online. We'll talk to you again next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.